And tonight is going to be another meaning of life type talks. Because a few months ago, part of my travels was going to an event in South Korea, up in the mountains. And I was asked to suggest other meditation teachers. And the one I suggested, because I knew him and I thought I might have a chance to persuade him to go to this event, and I managed to succeed in getting him to go there, was this monk called Ajahn Gunha, a Thai monk. And he has spent some time with me in Bodhinyana Monastery. And for those of you who don't know him, I'll just repeat his amazing story of the time when he was in the jungles of Thailand, sitting meditation in the jungles with a few other monks, when they all opened their eyes because there was a big jungle animal coming towards them. And it was a king cobra. And king cobras, I've seen a king cobra once, and it just shocked me how long it was. And this is much longer than you read about in the books. This was in the jungles. Because I saw its body stretched across the path and it was moving. I never saw its head. And the path was about 4 foot wide, about 1.2 meters. And I counted how many path lengths. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 8 path lengths till the tail came out. That's about a 10 meter long snake, which is really huge. So at least, because I never saw its head. And strange thing is, if ever you have those experiences in the jungles, you never feel actually afraid. You feel like awestruck that such a huge creature can exist and you can see them. It's as if maybe because they're so big, they're so majestic, that they're not really interested in little monks like you. Especially in those days when I was very thin and nothing much to eat. Go for the fat ones. But anyway, this big king cobra came up to these monks, especially to the senior monk, this Ajahn Gunha. It's this classic story. And actually, I should actually mention that, as all the monks who know this story, if you've heard it before, that in that part of Thailand, it was in the northeast, in a particular part of the northeast of Thailand, and they had like nicknames, like we do have nicknames for all sorts of animals. And the nickname for that king cobra in the northeastern, it translated as the one-step snake. And the reason they called it one-step snake, because once it bit you, you've only got one step and then you're dead. Is that venomous? Okay, so these are not things to be played around with. I mean, really venomous snakes. So anyway, that was its nickname, so a very scary snake. And so the snake came right up to this monk. All the monks were watching, had their eyes open. And the snake, like snakes do, it raised up its head. A cobra opened up its hood right in front of the monk. Right in front of the monk's nose. Now, when I tell this story, I usually ask the question, if that was you sitting in a jungle with a big king cobra, what would you do? And getting up running is a total waste of time, because I've seen these snakes, and the other thing you're awestruck by is how fast they can move. And even I remember there's a big python which stayed in a monastery in Thailand where I spent many years. Huge python, and that could move really fast. Fortunately, when it showed me how fast it was, it went in the opposite direction, not towards me. So I wasn't that scared about that, but really fast. So you can't outrun these snakes. So what can you do? So what this monk did, a great meditator, a great monk, he raised his hand and patted the king cobra on the head, saying in Thai, "Thank you for visiting me." And that king cobra never bit the monk, because it's very rare. It's just so, you have to have a very lucky day to get your head patted as a cobra. And so that cobra was loving every minute of it. Oh, yes, this is so nice. Do you like having your head patted every now and again by some kind person? Even these days, sometimes people ask monks to pat the baby's head and pat somebody's head as a blessing. And that's so hard for a snake to get. This, a cobra's getting a really nice patting from a very holy monk. That was so wonderful. And this monk just kept patting his head. And after the snake had enough of being patted by that monk, it closed its hood, put its head down, and apparently then it went to another monk, raised its head, opened its hood, and that monk said, "No way, go back to him. I'm not going to try this." But the snake was fine. But this is like the monk who pats king cobras. And also, we should have him here, because when he was staying at Bodhinyana Monastery, we're having trouble with our local council. When he was staying at Bodhinyana Monastery, the first year he came to spend a rains retreat with us, or first or second year. And that's when we had the plans for our meditation hall in the council. And now, they didn't know who we were, Buddhist monks. You know, what are they here for? What are they doing? And so, the mayor of the Shire of Serpentine Geraldo came to visit us, to check us out. And the mayor came. And the mayor, now this was many years ago, if you think I've got something around my tummy, this guy has got much, twice as much as I had. A really fat mayor. He was wearing a suit. I always remember this, he's wearing a suit with a nice jacket, and those buttons were almost going to explode any second. They're just really being pulled apart. So he came, and unfortunately, the first person to greet him, the mayor of Serpentine Geraldel Shire, was this monk, Ajahn Gunhar. And this monk went right up to the mayor, saw his enormous belly, and started rubbing it. And as soon as I thought that, stop it! This is not the way you greet His Worship the mayor, by rubbing their fat belly. And I thought that was the end of our planning approval. No more approval for anything. You know, that's really an insult. But in front of my eyes, I saw this mayor. His face just softened. He started smiling. And then I saw it giggling like a little baby, loving every second of having his belly rubbed. You know, this is a guy who can rub snakes' heads. So, you know, rubbing sort of Donald Trump's head, that would be easy for this monk. or rubbing the belly of the man, no problem. And from that day on, that mayor became one of our best friends. You know, even though I went to his funeral when he died, and I was an invited guest, so he was a really good friend. Just that kindness. But anyway, when I invited this monk to go to this ceremony with some of my friends in Korea for great meditation masters, when I asked him there, you know, he said, "Well, you know, my English is not very good, and you know what I teach. You know, you can teach for me, Ajahn Brahm." And I said, "Well, what do you want me to say?" And he said, "Well, you know, what life is all about." Because it was him who kept on saying, "Life is all about giving and service. You know, it's to give, surrender, do stuff for others, not thinking about yourself." And he went on about this for over half an hour. Just the meaning of life is to serve, is to give. And I thought that'd be a wonderful talk for this evening. Because many people do come to places like this center or come to Buddhism to see what they can get out of it. And of course, you know, that's true that many people just so much difficulties and suffering in the world. You know, troubles with, you know, your health. So many people come here when they have, like, cancers because they know that meditation can help. Stressed out in their jobs, difficulties with addictions, problems with, you know, all sorts of stuff. Many people come here, first of all, because they have problems. And it actually works. You get fixed up in this place. This is like the hospital. This is Nolamara General Hospital. And all sorts of different ways. And of course, you've all experienced that. That's why you keep coming back. And that's why many people listen to these talks online. It actually works. You actually get some, which is fine. But that's not really enough. That sometimes, you know, once one has received, then actually one is obliged almost just to give. But it's not just to give for the giving's sake. Because that is part of the happiness. It's part of the meaning of life. And if you're not serving and giving and helping out others, you actually miss out on life. I've noticed that for people who especially get depressed, and of course depression is a huge problem in our modern societies, why? And do you really always have to take the medications or the counseling to overcome depression, or like many people do, meditation? It's good. But you know, there's another therapy which is very, very powerful, and I've been encouraging this, and it does work, is actually service. Going and volunteering for an organization, giving some time to help others. Because then you're not actually looking about what I'm getting out of this. It's this beautiful act as part of being a human being, of giving and helping and serving and looking after others. It's not just about me. It's about always us, many, many people. And people have actually done that. They've done volunteer work. They actually get this big boost. A big boost of tiredness, but also a big boost of like feeling good about themselves and making a difference, actually doing something. And that has been my life as a monk, because sometimes, I must admit, when I first became a monk, I did it just now, just nice quiet life. A quiet life being a monk, especially a senior monk. Anyway, but to know just how much I like quietness, because sometimes people, oh, you just do all this work because you like it. Actually, that's not the case. I do it because I feel it's an important thing to do, and it's part of my life as a monk. But some years ago, I had a holiday. Long service leave, it was called at the time. It's supposed to be for a year, but the monk was supposed to be looking after the monastery at Serpentine when I was away. You know, he volunteered for something else, and so I could only squeeze in 6 months. 6 months of freedom as a monk. No responsibilities, no Friday night talks, no retreats, no counseling, not asking problems, not serving on the committee. 6 months freedom. So what did I do? Travel to see the other monasteries, go and spend time in Thailand, where I grew up, you know, go and find a nice mountain in China to meditate on the top of some deep cave somewhere. 6 months, and you know, didn't have to worry about airfares or anything. People just sponsor all of that. So I had 6 months freedom, long service leave. What did I do? I stayed in Bodhinyana Monastery, where I live. I stayed in one hut for 6 months. That was when I never saw a human being, honestly, for 6 months. Never saw a human being, never spoke to a human being for 6 months. I did my retreat. And I mention that because that is what I would always love to do. And for those, there's actually people here, they were just waiting. The first Friday night talk when I came off my retreat, I think they were having sort of some bets. Is he crazy? 2-1 on, he's mad. But I wasn't crazy, but it's incredible power of stillness for 6 months. Oh, I just love that time. Best time of my life. People say you can go crazy, but it really depends. If you have your meditation together, you know about stillness, and you rejoice in stillness, which is important. You're not afraid of it. Rejoice in it. Such a wonderful time of your life. Oh, and just even the sensitivity you have around nature around you, just the way you can feel things. It's not just the stillness, the deep insights, the great meditation, but it's all the other stuff around, which is amazing. Which, you know, when you are in solitude, you can get. It's a wonderful opportunity. But, yeah, you know, you spend some time by yourself. Now's the time to give back. And so the last few years, I've been just giving everything, not just to this place, to all sorts of other places as well. And I found that's also really important in your life, to be able to serve. And I say that because we do need, in 1 week's time, a lot of people, you know, to help out. Just run this Waisak ceremony. Waisak is the holiest day of the Buddhist calendar. It's a holiday in Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, but Myanmar, Sri Lanka. It's a big holiday all over the place. And it's, you know, because as many people from those lands come here, and also the Australian Buddhists, you know, who follow this tradition. It's the time when we remember the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and final passing away. It's just Christmas and Easter all rolled into one. So we want to make it a big celebration, but we need your help. Because it's always, whatever you do in life, it's always a struggle. sometimes, again, spending time in a cave, but also struggling as well. It's always a struggle, no matter what you do in life. You know, just becoming a monk was a struggle. To actually to get permission from your parents to find the opportunity so you can find a place where you can meditate, and struggling with the difficulties of climate, really hot. I was made in England, not made to live in Thailand. And now, you know, if you go to Thailand these days, oh, it's not so bad in Thailand. Yeah, you live in a hotel or spend your time by the beach or by the swimming pool. There was no swimming pools or beaches in the jungle monasteries. No air cons, no fans, no electricity. And it was really hot sometimes, boiling. And then you got the mosquitoes. I never had any mosquitoes in London. Always on at you, buzz, buzz, buzz. And I don't know what it is about the mosquitoes. You wouldn't mind if they just bit you, but they don't just bite you in Thailand. They go to your ear first of all, buzz, 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 we're coming, it's going to hurt, buzz, buzz, buzz. You know, and then they bite you. And they're sadists. Sadistic Thai mosquitoes. You know what I'm talking about there. So anyway, just all this sort of stuff. But you know, you had to fight through that. And endure and be tough, because that's also part of me. Like, I was thinking, how can you describe yourself like almost like a street fighter monk? Sometimes it's true. Because then also you come over here and just to get the monastery together. And I did most of the building of Bodhinyana Monastery. It was really hard work. You really had to fight and give a huge amount of effort just to build, because there was no money at the time. I've done many, many stories how incredibly tough it was, working all day. Sometimes people never turned up for food. So working all day on an empty stomach and really hot. And I remember that I had a... Well, this old time, when I was a young monk, stories, monks, they always know these. I was staying in a tent once, you know, before I had, that was actually, that was one step up from on my door. If you don't know the door story, the first thing which I slept on in Bodhinyana Monastery was a door. I was with another monk, you know, on two or three bricks on the corners, because that's all, second-hand door from the wreckers, or the salvage yard, that's right. And we had two doors. One was flat, the other one had ribs on. Because I was a junior monk, I got the ribs. And I slept on that for about 3 months. Well, sort of, we didn't really sleep. But anyway, that was tough. But then I went up market. I had a tent. And in the tent, it was an old tent, leaked. And my little mattress, only a few inches, was always soaking with water. For 3 months, absolutely drenched. So if I actually sat meditation on that soft surface, just the water would just soak into my butt. The only way I could actually keep dry was actually, well, not really dry, but if you lay on it, you spread out the pressure and so the water doesn't actually come up. And that's absolutely true. You know, this is... But, you know, you fight for this because, you know, in the end, you know that a little bit of endurance, a bit of building, getting people's face up, you can actually get a monastery together. And really proud that, you know, we've built a monastery here in Australia. No other city has got a monastery like Bodhinyana Monastery. But then, okay, then what can they do? Just relax? No. More service. There's more stuff to be done. Because sometimes people think that Buddhism is just so passive. You just sit there and meditate all day. And just something happens, I'll just let it go. And that's not what happens. I think one of the first things which I got really sort of upset about, and I did something, I don't just sit there and do nothing. If there's something you can do, do it and give it everything you've got. Was when somebody pointed out an article. It was actually published in the West Australian, our local magazine, but the original article came from the Daily Telegraph in London. It was an article about the Dalai Lama and homosexuality. And he was quoted in that newspaper as saying, you cannot be gay and a Buddhist at the same time. And of course, His Holiness the Dalai Lama saying that was, you know, really upset the Buddhists. And so they asked me, Ajahn Brahm, help! Because a lot of gays, lesbians, transgenders, forget the other names, but a lot of people, they look to Buddhism as the one religion they can be loved, accepted and respected. And they've been coming to places like this for such a long time, and that was dagger to their heart. What you mean? You know, we found a place at last, some place we can respect, we're welcome, we're treated with dignity, and now you say we can't be Buddhist, and that really hurt so many people. They sent me so many letters. So what did I do? I sent my letter to the West Australian and say, Dalai Lama's a very, very holy man and very good, but we all make mistakes sometimes, and he's made a mistake. What he said was absolutely wrong. And I got some hate mail from his supporters. You can't question the Dalai Lama. I said, yeah, of course you can. No, we all make mistakes sometimes. I usually make many, many mistakes. I tell these terrible jokes, which is a segue for today's terrible joke. The mic's not going to say this. Should I? Is it too bad? Okay. Today's terrible joke from a kid. It's a kid's joke. What do you get when you throw a grenade into a French kitchen? What do you get when you throw a grenade into a French kitchen? And the answer is linoleum blown apart. That's a terrible joke for kids. You shouldn't laugh. You're just encouraging me for next time. But it's a simple joke, so why not just laugh at it? It's just, so I do stupid things as well. So, you know, all. But then I decide to stand up. It doesn't matter how much flack you get. You know, if something is wrong, I'm going to get out there and fight for it. And so that was wonderful. And people thank me. At least I'm a leader of this temple, religion, if you might say, in Australia. And leaders have to take that responsibility to stand up for what's right. And actually, if you can change something, change it. And so at least, you know, you can do that. And so gay, lesbians, transgenders feel welcome here. And I always remember as a result of that, because my letter was prominent and people argued about it, but I stood my ground and said, no, of course you can be a Buddhist. You're welcome. Please, in the time of the Buddha, you were welcome. Now you are welcome. You always will be welcome. Everybody is welcome. I don't care what race, religion, age, sexual orientation, whatever disease you've got, you're welcome here. We're into sharing. Share your diseases. With an attitude like that, you don't get diseases, you become immune. But anyway, so as a result of that, I got one of my great honors. And you know, there's a few things you have in life when people, you know, show their gratitude for you, and you'll never ever forget it until the day you die. And my reward for standing up for that cause was I got my invitation to the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras breakfast. Not the actual Mardi Gras, for the breakfast beforehand. And so I was so happy to go over there. I think Harold and Curtin University at the time. And when I gave a little speech, I remember my little speech, and it was, you say, thank you for inviting me, and you think you are deviant. You say, you are not. I am more deviant than you are. I don't have any sex. I'm a monk. And it got a laugh, and it's okay, because it's actually true. As a celibate, people think it's unnatural not having sex. People actually say that. It's unnatural. There's something wrong with you. And they say, we can fix it. We can fix it. And that's exactly what they said to the gays and lesbians, transgenders, a long time ago. So you get some understanding, you know, what it feels. But anyway, I was very proud to stand. And of course, the next time I fought a battle was for gender equality in Buddhism, fighting for bhikkhuni ordination. That was a really good big battle, but really hard, because I lost a lot of friends, and it went on it's still probably going on. Still every now and again, sort of people just don't treat me with respect because of what I did. But of course, you know, you treat yourself with respect because you know what you did was an excellent thing. And you know that because now, here in Perth, we've got this incredible, wonderful monastery in Gidjiganup. The Nuns Monastery, Bhikkhunis, the real thing, which is an envy of many people in the world. Again, I don't know of any bhikkhuni monastery, you know, as well supported and as vibrant, as alive, as respected as the one we've got over here. So you fight these battles because that's my way of service, of giving. You know, you've got some power there, give it and make it happen. Making our retreat center happen for you guys. And just the monks are there, usually when there's no retreat on, building it up for you. Really weird, isn't it? Because how I was brought up as a monk, in Thailand, monks did nothing. We just sat there and just gave us stuff. I remember Ajahn Chah, my teacher, when he was asked, why did you become a monk? This was his answer. He said, growing up in a little village in the northeast of Thailand, you know, as a young boy, like most young boys and girls, they played games. Now, when you were very young, you may have played house or football or, you know, boys playing war or something. But he said in that village, his favorite game was playing monks. And as a young 5 or 6 year old, he would always volunteer to play the monk. And he would get some brown piece of cloth. And he said, in that game, it was a great game because all I ever needed to do was just to sit there. And all my friends would go to their house and bring me things to eat. It's a great game. He said, from that time on, I realized that's what I want to do in life. So my teacher had a great sense of humor, so you do, you get it from him. But it's that sometimes in Thailand what you do, you just sit there and people give you stuff. They're not here. Yeah, you have to really work hard. And I'm happy to do that, to be able to sort of work. So it's part of the job. And sometimes you ask, well, when are you going to stop? This same monk who patted the head, when I told him I was getting old, and he said, Ajahn Brahm, be careful. If you stop working, he said, you'll die. That's what he said to me. And actually, I listened to that, and I thought, yeah, exactly. Because we all need to have a meaning for our life, something we're actually doing, something we're serving, something we can feel proud of, something we can actually, at the end of the day, we feel we've achieved something. And as long as I've got breath and there's something to achieve, I'll still keep on working. And of course, there's always stuff to be done. And I'm inviting you to join that. This beautiful act of making something much bigger than yourself. A community, a little plug here for our nuns' monastery, Dhammasara. I found out just a couple of weeks ago that in the building permission, they are required by the local council regulations to have an entrance road 6 meters wide, going from the gate to their car park because of fire. It has to be sealed. So they can't just have the gravel road. In Thailand, it was so easy, just do anything, and just everyone would say, sadhu, sadhu, you know, great monks, whatever. You can do whatever you want, and no one would bother you, but not here. So that's going to cost maybe some people overseas $450,000 to do a kilometer of sealed road, 6 meters wide. So if you can't come and help on Waysak, there's other ways you can help out our society so that those nuns can survive and we can have real equity. It does take stuff to be able to achieve, you know, this equity and get respect for people. And if you can't, if you're not wealthy enough to help out in those things, there's other ways, you know, you can help out, you know, in a society like this by volunteering some of your time in a day like Waysak. Yeah, you can come and listen to the Dhamma talk. Yeah, you can come and meditate. Yeah, you can come and eat. But how about actually doing something as well, supporting this organization? If this has meant something for you, you've got something out of it. You know, it's also service as well. That's also where you get this next level of, you know, even benefit for yourself. Every time which I've achieved something, you always look back upon it. And honestly, there's times when I've cried. One of the other great achievements we did a long time ago, Waysak. I wrote about this in Good Bad Who Knows. Absolutely true story, miracle. How many years ago? We had a 30th anniversary, about 20 20 years ago, 18 years ago. Now we had a big celebration in Supreme Court Gardens. WASAC in 2005, was it? Oh, so it was only 11 years ago. Okay, 2005. But anyway, we hired Supreme Court Gardens. It was a Sunday, full moon day. It was the actual WASAC day, the celebration. And my character, as many of you know, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to never do anything half-hearted. If I go on a retreat, I go on for 6 months, 9 days, a couple of weeks. Oh, that's Mickey Mouse stuff. You're going to do it? 6 months, go for it. If you're going to build a monastery, build three. So that's my character. I've always really given everything I've got to whatever I'm doing. So anyway, so there we were. At that time, yeah, you know, we just didn't have that much money, but didn't matter. We're going to spend. Spend to make sure we're going to do it properly. Supreme Court Gardens. We got a big new Buddha statue from Thailand. You know where it is now? Behind me. That one. That came and it was put in Supreme Court Gardens, first of all. That's where it started off from. And Sunday, everyone was working really hard. And in the morning, it was raining. It's May. May, in this, you know, this time of year, there's big storms sometimes. And this was a big storm happening. I mean, a real big storm. Not a small one. Huge. Hitting Perth. Storm warnings. It was raining all day. From the morning we left after breakfast from Bodhi Nyana Monastery, we had, remember, fish and chips, just on the run as we're doing stuff in Supreme Court Gardens, and just working really hard. And everybody, including me, soaked to the skin. Three times. The premier at that time was Jeff Gallup. Three times. Now somebody gave me their mobile phone. They called me. Are you cancelling? Three times I said, no. There was a storm coming. We saw on the meteorological report it was to hit the center of Perth, right in the center of Perth, at 7:30 p.m. Exactly the time we were to do our ceremony. That's why three times Jeff Gallup's office, the premier's office, said, are you cancelling? No. One of our old members who died some time ago, Brian Creek, he was a merchant seaman. And he came up to me and said, look, I've been a merchant seaman. We know about storms. The barometer is dropping. It's a really low pressure. Now, if I was on a ship, we'd take evasive action. This is dangerous. You can't carry on. Yes, we are. And then there was this monk, thank you, Vihari. He took me aside, he grabbed me by the shoulder, pulled me aside, he said, Ajahn Brahm, you're embarrassing us. You're embarrassed. You know, it's okay to say no. It's okay. You won't lose face. You know, we'd actually respect you even more, but you're humiliating us. No. I can be very stubborn, Mr. President, as you well know. No. And I remember again, for my whole life, Cherry's mum, Shirley, she passed away too now. So she came crying into the tent when I was helping arrange the chairs, tears streaming down her face. You got to come out, Ajahn Brahm, you got to come out. And straight away I thought, oh no, what's happened now? Someone had an accident or something. And she came out and she never said anything. She just pointed up at the sky. The clouds had parted and you could see the full moon high in the sky. Beautiful. That's why she was crying. The rain had stopped. And Jeff Gallup came. We did the ceremony. At the end of which it poured with rain. Honestly, Supreme Court Gardens was under 2 inches of water. The freeway, the Kwinana freeway, flooded the following morning. It was a really heavy storm, but we stopped it. just for the couple of hours necessary for our ceremony. This is the power of this. And the reason I say this story was the following morning, like tomorrow morning, I'm just flying off to Melbourne to do some service there, to help with their WAISAC, Buddhist Society of Victoria. I'm also, that's another job I do. I'm their spiritual advisor over there. They're basically their head monk. So I'm going over there. And this is what I had to do after the WAISAC on that year, fly to Melbourne. So you can imagine just hardly any sleep the night before, really exhausted. Sleep, get up early, go to the airport, check in. About half an hour before my flight was to take off, found a nice quiet corner and cried my eyes out. Cry, cry, cry. Out of joy, inspiration, you'd done something. That's the first time that I could actually just remember what had happened. How just all that hard work, all that effort, all that giving, service, pushing yourself to the limits for others, and now you could get the payback. And that's when the Thai ambassador spotted me, because she'd come over for the celebration, and so she was very kind enough to invite me up into the lounge so I could have a nice place to cry. The Qantas lounge, I think, at the time. But no, it's really, really amazing. The inspiration you get when actually you do something, which is amazing. So this is actually why it's great to have that opportunity to serve. And look, you know, sometimes, you know, people say, this is my 65th year. How many more years have I got inside of me? You know, actually, as long as I keep working a lot. But, you know, we always look towards the end of our life. And just at the end of your life, you look back and say, what have I done? And it's not what you've received, which you always remember. It's how much you've served, how much you've given. What difference you've made in your particular area of life. Yeah, there's so many ways you can serve and you can give, sacrifice yourself for others, volunteering, standing up for a cause you're really passionate about, and you're going to go and do it. Doesn't matter, you know, how much it hurts you. I always remember another saying. This is not Buddhist. This is from Mahatma Gandhi. There are these sayings which, you know, you always remember, which go right inside you, which basically run your life. And what he said was, I can see 1,000 reasons to give my life for a good cause, but never a reason to take the life of another. Never one reason. But 1,000 reasons to give your life for something else, for a good cause. Now that's obviously a very, very advanced, high-minded man who would have died very happily, knowing that he'd given so much. You know, he was the one who kicked my ancestors out of India, the British Raj. And just imagine, you know, the might of the British Empire at its peak, and this little tiny man in rags defeated the might of the British Army. Now that is incredible, like image which I have. Small guys, tiny women or whatever, but just so motivated, so wise, and so... again, committed to what they're doing. They just give and give and give, and there's no way that they can not succeed. I don't know what difference you want to make in this world. You see, all sorts of problems. Don't take too many problems on, one at a time. And it's not just your own problems, because we all have our own problems in our own life, our own health, our own family, our own little... But just sometimes the best way of solving your own personal problems is looking out for others. Incredible compassion. Sometimes when you do that, you look at your own problems and think, crikey, mine are hardly anything compared to some of the other things which people go through in life. And if you can actually understand that, then, you know, you actually understand what it's like to, as they say, that, you know, if you ever really want to understand men, just, you know, walk a mile every day in their shoes. And then you'll be so far away, it doesn't really matter. That's what the wife... That's what the husband said to his wife. But, no, sometimes, that when we do serve others, the whole thing is our mind goes out to another bigger cause. Sometimes we're so focused on ourselves, on our own problems, we get obsessed. We don't actually see the bigger picture. Now, this is one of my oldest similes, and my similes just go around and around and around. Somebody, I think it was Bert, sent me an email link. Some new age psychologist. The glass of water. Holding a glass of water too long is the meaning of stress. Again, this is Ajahn Brahm's simile. You know where I got this actually from Ajahn Chah. He started off, you know, because I remember actually where he taught me this. That we were walking back from Arms Round one morning, and he stopped. I think I was carrying his bowl. And he just picked up a stick from the side of the road. And he picked up a stick like this, and he asked me, he said, Brahma Wangso, that's how he called me. I wasn't an Ajahn then. Brahma Wangso, is the stick heavy? And before I could answer, he threw it away. And he said, it's only heavy when you're holding it. And these are great teachings, because it's physical. You can remember them very easily. Thank you so much. It's only heavy when you hold it. Now, when I started teaching that here, you know, I didn't want to throw this around. I did it this time. So, you know, what's a similar simile? Don't have a glass of water, because this is, you know, I always have a glass of water in front of me when I give talks. So, you know, use whatever is to hand. So I said, glass of water, the same. It's only heavy when you hold it. Actually, the longer you hold it, the heavier it becomes. That's where the simile came from. And you see, it's gone around. And one of the other similes, which goes around, which I invented, my hand. How big is your hand? My hand is now so big I can't see any of you. All I can see is my hand. That's all I can see in the whole universe is my hand. Is it my hand's fault it's too big, or is it because my perspective? When I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, my hand hasn't diminished in size. But now I can see each one of you, and I can see the garden outside, I can see the walls, I can see so much more when I get the right perspective. Trouble is, when we have our own problems, it's right in front of us, that's all we can see, we can't see anything else. We put it where it belongs, at the end of our arm. The problem is still the same, but perspective has changed, and that makes all the difference. And one of the great methods of getting that perspective, getting the hand from in front of your face and to out where it belongs, at the end of your arm, is service to others. Giving, looking after other people. Doing something which is not you, which is community, which is us. Service, doing things for others. What that does is puts your problem in perspective, and you find from that it just starts to evaporate away. And it gets incredible joy, because we are social beings. Yeah, I can do 6 months by myself. Not many people can do that in solitude, but I also have to come out and serve others afterwards to share all of the power which you get to others, all the wisdom, all the happiness, all the joy, all the bad jokes to share. Because if you can do that, then you understand what the meaning of life actually is, to give. And there comes a time, because I know how to give selflessly, not expecting anything back in return, which is what giving is. If you're going out there serving, expecting to be thanked, expected to, you know, have your name on a board, expected to get some Order of Australia for all the amazing work you've done, if you're doing it to get something, that you're missing out. We give, we serve, not to get anything, but just for the privilege of actually serving and giving. It's a great, wonderful thing to be able to help others. Thank you. When people keep saying, oh, I'm just a doormat, I get exploited, I say, exactly, that is the purpose of your life. And that sort of starts to make them see it in a different way. Because I teach by example. That's the purpose of my life, to be exploited. Exploit me. Use me as a doormat. Come up here, doesn't matter how tired I am, tell me your problems. I may not be able to fix them, but at least I'll listen to them with respect. And of course, tomorrow morning I'll do the same. And the next evening over in Melbourne, do exactly the same. Fix up this, fix up that. And sometimes you fix it up, sometimes it's too fixed already to fix. It's really in a fix. So sometimes you can't do anything, but at least you're there. So that idea to actually to serve, to give, is actually taking you outside to something much bigger. And you just give, you don't expect anything back in return. Once you know how to do that, then, just to finish off this talk, you know how to meditate. How many people know how to meditate? Sometimes people look at me, some of the monks look at me, I work really hard. I just had a really nice meditation before this talk. Should be impossible. Been just working, worrying about the WASAC next week and the council regulations and stuff. Ooh. But I can let it go. To be able to drop all these problems and stress and really important matters, or what you take to be important, to be able to drop it is an amazing skill. And it's exactly the same skill you learn from service, from giving. To be able to let go of what you want, of you, yourself, your ego, your me. Because when you're helping others, there's no me involved anymore. Your focus is on something bigger than you. So when I meditate, again, I'm not meditating. I vanish. A deep teaching for you tonight. Those of you who've been on retreats, heard the talks of monastery, know this teaching. It's from one of the great meditation books in Theravada Buddhism called Visuddhimagga. They say, the path is, but no traveler on it is seen. It's a beautiful, beautiful saying. It's very simple. The path is, the path of meditation, the path of life, the path of Dhamma, the path of spiritual enlightenment, that is. It exists. It's there. But there's no traveler on it. You can't be the one who walks that path. You have to vanish. The whole idea of you doing it, that you traveling, the whole idea of you meditating has to vanish. Because when you disappear, when there's no traveler anymore, then the path manifests. This wonderful idea of disappearing, this me, this I, which causes me so many problems, vanishes. And when you're not there anymore, when there's nothing you need because there's no one to need it, when there's no problems because there's no one to actually to have any problems, so that's where you can really let go. Let go of the owner. And then all that you were attached to, there's no one to hold on to it anymore. It all vanishes. The path is, but no traveler on it is seen. So because you give, you surrender, you let go, you vanish, you serve, whatever you can do, you just do it for the sake of others. When it's time for you, you don't travel anymore. You're not there. Then meditation is as easy as drinking a glass of water. Thank you. Very good. Okay, so any questions from the floor? And again, yes, it's also Dennis, was it? Prem is over there. Anyone wants to volunteer for something? Where's Prem gone? Okay, he's your guy.
Hi, Benton. I'll tell you something, like I come from the background, like the gay community. I support my rights. My sexuality is, I support you guys, my heart, and I'm one of them of the gay communities of your respect for you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Very good. It was a compliment. Thank you. You're always welcome here. And any messages from the internet today? No internet questions?
No questions today, Ajahn.
Wow. People were stunned. Very good. Okay, so let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and then hopefully see you next time, next place.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhaṃ Bhagavantaṃ Abhivadami Suvakkato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammaṃ Namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.